Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is 3K12 Education Talk Radio, our second show today, on October 5th, 2022. Thank you for being with us. Today's show, this show is with, let me turn off the music there, is with CCSSO, the Castle Chief State School Officers. Always an enjoyable show. We've got Austin Estes here. Austin is the Program Director of CCSSO's COVID Relief Data Project. Okay, it's a nationwide initiative to study and tell the story of how the states are using the ESSER funds. Okay, that's the Elementary and Secondary School Emergency Relief. Thank you for another acronym, the ESSER funds. All right, and so we'll see what's going on. We can share this, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to be a good show, which we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. It's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. Our magazine is over there, Equity and Access. You can just click on the cover. It's a pretty good issue, I got to tell you. Check it out. All right, and teacher-retention.com and SEL, our resource center, SEL today, SELtoday.org, and our Excellence in Equity Awards program. It's all over there. It's all linked. Everything's there, ace-ed.org. Please check it out. And without further ado, let me bring on the one and only Austin Estes on Spinny. There we go. Hey, Austin, it's Larry here. How you doing?
Hey, Larry, how's it going? Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Where are you calling in from today?
I'm located in Washington, D.C.
Good enough. Okay. But how's the weather in Washington?
Oh, man, it has been a very rainy and very wet week, but I feel like I can't complain.
Yeah.
I've got family down in Central Florida, and they got hit pretty hard with the hurricane week. So we just get a little bit of rain. That's not too much to complain about.
Yeah, can't complain about that. A buddy of mine a few weeks ago had a flood in the basement in Chicago, and he was moaning and groaning that he saw what happened in South Florida, or Southwest Florida, and he stopped moaning and groaning, okay? Because, boy, that was just brutal. I hope your family's okay down there. That's no fun. That's no fun at all. Damn hurricanes. Okay, they're terrible.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, not good. Is that where you're from? Are you from there?
Yeah, from the Cocoa Beach area. It's on the opposite coast over on the east side. But most of my family now is in Orlando.
Okay, well, they had some flooding there. We have friends who had nothing, you know, just rain. I had other friends who had flooding down there. It's really nuts. It depends on what side of the city you were on, et cetera, et cetera. I wish your family well, okay? COVID relief.
Yeah, they're doing fine. Got a little bit of rain. Lost power for a bit, but they didn't get the worst of the damage.
There you go. And that's what matters, okay? And, you know, what can I tell you? You live in Florida, take the risk of these hurricanes. They're all over the place down there, and they're just getting worse. I hope people realize that. You know, that really they have to start changing things down there, the building codes, et cetera, et cetera. You can't have the prefab houses down there, et cetera, et cetera. You got to prepare for the worst, not the easiest. Okay, it's that simple. Okay, they're going to just repeat this over and over again. It's a shame. And I know they strengthened their building codes down there, but it needs to really, really be. So at any rate, we'll just move on from that. Okay, ESSER funding. Okay, what did you learn? What are the big investments with all the dollars that came in? It's just a huge amount of money. What are we talking about? And what are school districts doing with the money? Yeah, Austin.
Yeah, so we saw early in the pandemic, we saw the federal government provide a historic level of funding in total for K through 12 education just through the ESSER program alone. We saw about $190 billion going to schools, districts, and states across the country, which dwarfs the amount of money that states and districts traditionally get from the federal government. I'm sure folks remember the CARES Act in March of 2020. There was about $13 billion or so through the ESSER program that was appropriated back then. And then with CARISSA in December of 2020, we saw another $54 billion or so. And then with the American Rescue Plan, about $120 billion towards education. So what we've been doing at CCSSO is we want to know how the money is being used, what are states and districts learning from their recovery efforts, how can we continue to kind of share stories of what is working to better support, addressing unfinished learning for students and helping them get back on track. So we've been tracking, not to get too much into the weeds, but the important thing to know is that with the ESSER program, most of it went to schools and districts. So about 90% of the total
right.
went down to the local level, but
right.
states could keep 10% at the state level. So we've been working to see what are states doing with their funding. That still amounts to about $19 billion.
It's a lot of bread.
Much money. I can't even wrap my mind around it.
Yeah, it's a lot of bread.
But we've been able to, you know, through our partnerships with states and by tracking down public records, we've been able to find about $18 billion of the $19 billion. So we have a pretty good sense of how that money's being used.
Yeah, it's a funny line. You got $1 billion left over there. You track down 18 of the 19. It's the old David Dirksen line, a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon we're talking about
mm-hmm.
real money. Okay, it's the old line.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the states had control of $18 billion, okay? Let's go down the list of challenges they have and how they apply the money, okay? And I'll ask you the first – well, maybe you want to do it the other way. What did you find? Where did they apply the money? What did you find is the consistency?
Yeah, so I think it's helpful to start with the challenges, right? So states and schools and districts – early in the pandemic, we're facing multiple challenges on multiple fronts, not just unfinished learning. You know, students were out of school. They had a pretty significant disruption to learning. And we've seen that reflected in the recent NAEP scores, which show decades, it drops in reading and math that we haven't seen in decades. So there's a lot of work to do to catch up on unfinished learning. And that's where we're seeing most of the money going. So we've documented about $4.2 billion, that's billion with a B, going to tutoring and accelerated learning initiatives. We've documented $2.9 billion, that's going towards before and after school programs, summer enrichment opportunities, and other programming outside of the school day. And then we've seen about $1.3 billion for curriculum and instruction. So The vast majority of the money is going towards academic recovery. Some of the other priority areas, though, where we're seeing a lot of state investment is in support for retention and recruitment of school staff, addressing
mm-hmm.
teacher shortages by subject area, by grade level, by region. That's about $1.4 billion that's going towards those efforts. We've seen a lot of focus on technology and remote learning. There's about $1.1 billion that's going towards, purchasing devices, hotspots, developing remote learning opportunities and materials. So a lot of that was early in the pandemic when schools were, many schools were closed. And then the last area where we're seeing a lot of priority is in support for student and staff mental health. So some data that the U.S. Department of Education released recently that shows that 70% of public schools show an increase in the students who have sought mental health services during the pandemic. About a third of schools are seeing an increase in staff who are seeking mental health services. So this is a major crisis, a major focus area for schools and districts.
It's amazing.
So we've seen about
$1 billion. I know it, by the way, we've talked about it here, and it's really something, and it's interesting, and I'll just say this, you said a minute ago that there was $1.4 billion towards teacher retention. Okay, we have a website, we're very concerned about this, called teacher-retention.com. It's heavy-duty stuff, all right? You know what's going on out there. And then you said also that there's been an increase in the needs for staff, student, and emotional support, okay? And those two actually run together, okay? Because if the people are unhappy in their job and don't feel that they're getting anything done in their job, they're going to leave their job, okay, and find something else. And this would be – we're talking specifically about teachers, okay? So that SEL for educators, and I might add – SEL for students, because if students are having so many problems learning, and we know that they are right now, okay, a teacher's job is to have children learn, and if the kids aren't doing it, we know that SEL, social-emotional learning, really affects academic performance. So all these things, although we talk about them separately, okay, they can't be separated, okay? It's all part and parcel of the same challenge, and in this case, teacher retention, okay? What do you think on that, Austin?
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, we're seeing it's kind of a big puzzle piece, right? If you don't have all the pieces in place, then you're not going to see a recovery. And if you're only focused on
the puzzle,
on,
period.
Exactly. So you need to make sure that students have access to experienced teachers in the classroom. You have to make sure that their mental and physical health needs are taken care of. You need to make sure that they have access to high quality instructional materials and devices. If you don't have all those pieces in place, we're not going to see movement on academics the way that we would want to. And and states recognize this, and that's why they're prioritizing all of these efforts. You know, they're not only focusing on scaling up tutoring, but they're, you know, states like Oklahoma have put a lot of money into supporting hiring school psychologists. Mississippi has set up a statewide telehealth program so that students in rural schools who might not have access to a nurse or a school psychologist in their school building can access those remote telehealth opportunities.
I mean, it's so darn important that we get all this done. And did you get down into the weeds? I just want to talk to you about this teacher retention thing, which I think is really one of the biggest challenges we have out there. Because teacher retention is incredibly important now because it's very hard to recruit new teachers. Okay, now people take them maybe from other districts, but that just leads the problem into another district. Okay, the pipeline of new teachers in education schools is getting lower and lower and lower. Those cohorts are dropping. As you did this, Austin, did you get into the weeds when they say, and you talk, I'm sure you talked to all your state school officers, you know, when they talk about $1.4 billion for teacher retention, what does that actually mean? You know, what are they actually spending the money on? I don't know whether you could answer that or not, but I'm just curious. Because it's easy to throw out the number from the state. Okay, but what are they actually doing? Do you know?
Yeah. So, well, I think the first important note is that states have always shortages in certain subject areas and regions.
Right.
So the teacher shortage isn't new during the pandemic. It's just heightened during the pandemic. So we've seen, I would say, kind of two general approaches that states are taking. One is support for the current workforce. So making sure that we can retain the school staff that we have in school buildings today, make sure that they are supported, that they have access to high quality professional learning opportunities, that they have access to mental health supports too.
Like we were saying.
Exactly. So there's been a lot of money that's gone towards, you know, retention bonuses for staff. And I'm not just talking about teachers either. I'm talking about bus drivers, talking about nurses, talking about a cafeteria.
That's a great point.
Staff. And that's where we're seeing some of the largest shortages too, is in non-teaching staff. So that's kind of one bucket of funding is going towards support for the current workforce. And then we're also seeing a lot of funding going towards strengthening the future workforce. So establishing pathways into the teaching profession. Let me just give you a few quick examples of what we've been seeing.
Please.
So there's been investment in teacher residencies, so working with educator prep programs, helping prospective teachers get the education and support that they need to transition into the classroom. There's been a lot of support for Grow Your Own programs, helping communities recruit from their own communities. There are a couple of states that are working on supporting paraprofessionals to transition into fully
certified
teachers.
Which I think is a very good thing.
Exactly. And there's a lot of innovation that's happening here too. I mean, this not specifically with the ESSER funds, but we're starting to see some work led by states like Tennessee and Iowa around registered teacher apprenticeship, which is kind of a new area of work. And then the last area where we're seeing some focus from states is on diversification of the teacher workforce, recognizing that the teaching workforce across the country does not reflect the diversity of the students that are being taught. So there's an intentional effort to make sure that there's more pathways for teachers of color and teachers of diverse backgrounds to enter into the profession.
Yeah, and I hope that, and I hope they do. That is something that really has to happen as well. There's so many, you said it best, pieces to the puzzle to complete the 1,000-piece puzzle. Okay, it's hard to do. All right, and that, which begs the question: the money came down from the government, but 10% of the ESSER funds went to the states. Okay, but okay, that money doesn't last forever. Okay, it's not coming down next year. It's not coming down the year after, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. And I know that they apply this to what they thought they needed. How sustainable is it all when all said and done? What are you hearing from the states?
Yeah, that's the $190 billion question right there. So the federal relief dollars were always intended to be one-time funds. The goal was right. to address pandemic-related needs. Support continuity of learning, help reopen schools, help get students caught up from unfinished learning early in the pandemic. That said, there's a need, you know, the states and schools and districts are facing this fiscal cliff in 2024, which is when the American Rescue Plan dollars need to be obligated. And they're trying to think about how to phase out some of these programs or sustain them by finding additional funding. But it's a big challenge. You know, they're trying to scale these up really quickly to be able to reach as many students as possible, but they're hesitant to hire new staff, knowing that they won't be able to pay their salaries in two
right,
years.
Right.
So it really is a challenge. So
what are you
there
hearing
are
that they're
few...
doing? Well, how are they? Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We planned that question as how sustainable are these investments, not how sustainable mm-hmm. are these dollars. Okay, an investment means that you're taking the money and you're planning it for the future, as opposed to just spending it now. All right, and I mean, and as the states looked at this, and this is kind of an interesting question. Do they philosophically did they see it as an investment or did they see it as dollars that needed to be spent immediately, short term? How did they look at it? Did you get into that at all?
I think it's a little bit of both, because there's both the emergent or the urgent immediate needs of, you know, reopening school, you know, early in the pandemic, getting schools reopened, making sure that there are enough tests and masks and things like that. But what we're seeing too is that states are experimenting a little bit with new strategies and new programs that, you know, they have some evidence that shows that they're going to work, but they've never done this at scale. And we're seeing a lot, you know, with high dosage tutoring, there's evidence that this works, but it's never been implemented
mm-hmm.
at scale before. So we're learning what works. We're trying to figure out what the return on these investments is. So in our conversations with states, a lot of them are thinking about, first of all, like how do we measure the impact of these investments? So there's at least a dozen states that we've been able to document that are using some of their relief funds to support research and evaluation that are partnering with universities and researchers to study the impact of these investments. And so they can say definitively, this works, this didn't work, here's something that we can try to sustain. And that helps build the case for these programs as well. If we know that, support for mental health services actually improves outcomes for students, then you can make the case that should be sustained with federal dollars or state dollars in the future. Another thing that they're doing is they're looking at other funding sources. So I've talked with a number of states that are braiding their funding. They're using some of the other relief funds. They're using some state funding. They're using other federal funding that's sustained through through ESEA or IDEA or other programs. One example where I've been looking into ways that states are supporting principal pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
There's some states that we've talked to that have, you know, new leadership development programs that are funded with their relief money, but they're also putting in money from Title II under ESEA to mm-hmm. pay for half of the cost for those programs. So that at least helps them kind of transition that to other funding sources once the relief funding dries up. And then the third thing that they're doing is state leaders are starting to lay the foundation with policymakers. I was just talking with a state leader the other day who, you know, is really excited about this new program that he's got off the ground. They're already starting to see impact. This is a principal leadership program, already mm-hmm. starting to see some impact. He's already talking to state legislators, and they've said, hey, fund this through 2024 with your federal relief dollars. After that, we've got you. We'll take care of it. We'll find some funding from state resources to be able to sustain this program. So I think when the dust settles, ultimately a lot of these programs will have to be phased out. There's not going to be continued investments of this scale from the federal government. But I think if we have the data and we're investing in research and we're laying that foundation now, I think a lot of these programs that have been proven to work can be sustained after 2024.
And as you talk to the 50 states, okay, and you mentioned a bunch of things, tutoring, curriculum and instruction, obviously infrastructure is another thing, okay, product, services, okay, units, that kind of thing. Then you have teacher retention, you have SEL and all that. As you talk to the various 50 states, okay, what were the things, did they all come up with the same priority? When all was said and done, was there one thing that stood out among all the others?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of commonality across states because the needs are so similar, right? So students, there was a disparate impact. So there were some states didn't have the same case rates with COVID as others. Some of them were schools were shut down for longer right. than others. But at the same time, we're seeing a lot of commonality in those priorities that I mentioned earlier, academic recovery, teacher recruitment, access to technology, and student and staff mental health. Each state had its own process for setting priorities. They were required under the American Rescue Plan. They were required to engage stakeholders across their state, talk to members of the community, talk to parents and teachers, and get input into their priorities. And that kind of set the agenda for their recovery plan. But it's also tailored to each state. And I'll give you one example. In North Carolina, they established this Office of Learning Recovery and Acceleration, and they were able to look at the academic impact of the pandemic on students in different subject areas and grade levels. And they found that the largest impact was in middle grade math. And so that's where they're directing a lot of their focus, is on supporting learning recovery and acceleration in middle grades and in math. At a high level, the priorities are pretty similar across states, but then once you get down into the details, they're trying to be really strategic about how they're targeting their resources to address the challenges that are most pressing in their communities and in their states.
You know, it's absolutely amazing that we were able to get through this. And I keep saying, and it brings back to what we were talking about with Florida at the beginning of this. You know, Florida has to be very careful. Let's look at Fort Myers as an example. Everybody says they want to rebuild. But there's another hurricane coming down the pike at some point. I don't want it to happen, but we all know what's going to happen. Okay. And people can't live. I'm just trying to create an analogy here. People can't live in trailers or in prefab houses out on a strip on an island. Okay. And expect to make it through that. Okay. It's just not going to work. And it's the same thing. There's other challenges. We got caught short with the pandemic, but there's a chance it's going to happen again. We can't let it happen again. And they have to look at this as investments in the future. When you talk to them, the school districts, are they talking to the local districts? I mean, to the states, are they talking to the local districts off Austin about what the districts feel they need, et cetera? I mean, it's so different across the board. You know, rural South Dakota is very different from suburban New York and Long Island. I mean, you know, what are you hearing just in general about that? Do they feel secure for the future?
Yeah, I think that that is a pretty apt analogy. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic was one of the most disruptive forces that we've seen in K-12 education ever. And you, in many cases, the metaphorical house was knocked down, and states are, and districts and schools are in the process of rebuilding that house, making sure that there's a strong structure that
right.
has a really strong foundation
right.
that can create the conditions for learning and for student success. I think in a lot of ways, states and districts and schools are using this opportunity to relay that foundation and make sure that the foundation is strong and secure so that it can withstand future disruptions. And, you know, some examples of that, I think, is the investments that we're seeing in high quality curriculum and instruction. This is an opportunity to bring in some resources, deploy evidence-based strategies and instructional tools that are going to create that stronger foundation. We're also seeing a lot of experimentation too, a lot of new approaches to learning, a lot of new innovative models.
Right.
You know, but my background is actually in career technical education. So
oh.
I've been really excited to see some
Good
of the
you.
Work that is happening around, you know, work-based learning opportunities. That's
I think
around,
it's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, expanding access to dual enrollment, AP, IB. So I think there's a lot of rethinking how we rebuild. You know, there's a lot to learn from what was there before, but as we rebuild this house, we could rebuild it in new ways that are going to create a stronger foundation for students in the future.
Exactly.
And you were asking, too, about how districts have been involved. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of the innovation is happening at the local level. You know, state education agencies play important roles in supporting and facilitating that recovery effort. But, you know, it's the leaders on the ground who are working directly with students who see firsthand what the needs are and who can help facilitate that recovery. So there are states that have established steering committees with local leaders that are working collaboratively with them to get input into their recovery plans. There are states that are working to lift up stories about the work that's happening at the local level, so because they know, you know, something's working in this district, their peers across the state could benefit from learning from that strategy as well.
Exactly.
So we're seeing a lot of work in partnership between districts and states.
And that's the purpose, if I may, of like an organization like CCSSO. Not everybody has to reinvent the wheel. Somebody already has the
mm-hmm.
wheel, that it works. Okay? And
exactly.
if we can tap into that, okay, it's going to make a big difference because, you know, you said there's a lot of commonalities here. All right? And we've just got to use mm-hmm. this. It's really going to be interesting to see how this all shakes out over the next few years. I mean, we plowed our way, okay, through the pandemic. All right, and just got caught short, and we did a pretty damn good job, all things considered. We built a plane as it was flying, okay? And now
mm-hmm.
we got to bring it in for a landing and get ready for the next one, okay? Austin, thank you. Continue this good work. I found it interesting you were involved in CTE. That's one of my favorite things out there, and I think that's a huge
mm-hmm.
wave of the future, okay, now and in the future in K-12. So thank you, my friend, for being here. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
You were terrific. Okay, I really appreciate it. Thanks, Austin. You have a good day. Enjoy D.C.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay, everybody. Austin Estes from CCSSO, Castle Chief State School Officer, CCSSO.org. All this is over there at the website. I've got it linked here as you're listening. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.